Golden thread, a coda. The threads that touch seem the same, but the extremes are distant, as often after a rainstorm, the expanse of the sky, struck by the sunlight, is stained by a rainbow in one vast arch, in which a thousand separate colours shine, but the eye itself still cannot see the transitions. There are inserted lasting threads of gold, and an ancient tale is spun in the web. Ovid, Metamorphoses, Book 6. Arachne spins her winning cloth. The legend of the Golden Fleece was old even in antiquity. It begins with classic ingredients: a king, his two children, and a scheming stepmother. When the king's realm is stricken with a famine, his new wife persuades him that crops will grow again if he sacrifices his children to Zeus. He, perhaps through weakness or a sense of greater duty, agrees. But at the last moment, his children are saved by a golden ram. The children clamber on its back and grasp its curling golden fleece as it launches itself into the air. The ram is later sacrificed to Zeus, and its fleece is hung upon the bough of a tree in a sacred grove. Later, the golden fleece, now guarded by a dragon, is sought by the hero Jason and his Argonauts in his quest to reclaim his throne. Golden textiles, and the stories we tell ourselves and each other about them, are at the most exclusive apex of a rich global tradition. The legend of the fleece itself may well have been influenced by Mesopotamian religious beliefs that are thought to date back to the 20th century BC. During ceremonies, statues of deities would be clothed in rich woolen fabrics, embroidered with small looped pieces of gold that might, with a little imagination, be said to resemble the thick staples of a sheep's fleece. In 15th century Europe, Philip III, Duke of Burgundy, also known as Philip the Good, used the Golden Fleece as the inspiration for a new order of knighthood, the Order of the Golden Fleece. Members wore golden collars decorated with depictions of the ram slung over a branch. Cloth woven from or embroidered with golden threads has been used by elites the world over to inspire awe and cement their exalted place in society. The common apparel system, developed in China during the 12th century under the aegis of Emperor Shangzong, explicitly used gold-embellished clothing to distinguish between social classes. Third-rank officials, for example, wore black embroidered with gold thread. Unmarried girls wore dresses of red, silver, or golden cloth with colourful collars. During the 14th century, the Mongol court delighted in intricately woven shimmering textiles, many of which were influenced by Central Asian motifs and techniques, suggesting that East Iranian weavers were lured to China by the promise of work and patronage. Fabrics shot with precious metals were traditionally used in Muslim culture to demarcate status and celebrate special occasions. They were given as dowries, and their ability to capture and reflect light linked them and the wearer with the divine. Gold and silver cloth were carefully deployed by rulers to cement their link with godly power. One chronicler, writing in the early 19th century, neatly captured the point. The embroidered kilat, robe, of high value worn by the Nawab, ruler that day, and also the ornaments set with jewels, emitted such bright light that the world illumination sun felt depressed. Europeans delighted in golden cloth too. France and England had been at war for most of the Middle Ages, but in the summer of 1520, two young monarchs, Henry VIII of England and Francis I of France, determined to meet and settle the dispute. The ceremony, involving much jousting, feasting, and lavish gift-giving, was arranged on neutral territory, but the two rulers, each desperate to impress and outshine the other, made extensive use of gold. It adorned their tents, pavilions, horses, and the robes of their retinues. So excessive was their use of it that both kingdoms were nearly bankrupted, and the meeting has been known as the Field of Cloth of Gold ever since. Many textiles of this kind were imported to Europe from the East along flourishing trade routes. For example, when Spanish trading ships arrived in the port of Manila in 1573, golden textiles from China were high on their list of trading priorities. Antonio de Morga, a local official, wrote that Spanish silver was exchanged for silks, including quantities of velvet, with body of gold and embroidered with gold, woven stuffs and brocades of gold and silver upon silk of various colours and patterns, quantities of gold and silver thread in skeins. Parallel to the lavish use of the real thing, there has also been a long tradition of cultivating or creating fabrics that appear to be made from golden cloth. Fibres made from minute strands of glass, invented by the ancient Egyptians sometime around 1600 BC, were used by 19th century textile makers to create imitation gold brocades as lustrous as the real thing. A glassmaker from Ohio went so far as to make dresses for the actress Georgia Cavan and the Infanta Eulalie from glass fibres that were displayed at the 1893 Chicago World Fair. Ignoring both the supreme fragility and inconvenience of such garments, the New York Times confidently predicted a fad for glass dresses. Another golden fibre has proved more enduring. A description of Odysseus in Homer's Odyssey mentions a tunic glossy like the skin of a dried onion and as soft. It shone like the sun. Although we can't be sure, this sounds a lot like sea silk, a fabric that, according to the Book of Exodus, was worn by King Solomon. Exceptionally rare and airy, the raw material for sea silk or byssus is threads of solidified saliva of Pinna nobilis, a large mollusk native to the Mediterranean waters surrounding Sardinia. These strands, which P. nobilis uses to attach itself firmly to rocks, are difficult and time-consuming to harvest and weave. But for those who know how, the end result is remarkable for the way the soft brown threads glint golden when exposed to the sun. Today, only one woman is able to harvest and make sea silk. Chiara Vigo, who learned the secret from her grandmother, has in turn passed the secret on to her daughter. "Weaving the sea silk is what my family has been doing for centuries," she has said. "The most important thread for my family was the thread of their history, their tradition." The majority of people alive today will never see, let alone wear, sea silk or cloth of gold. They won't cross seas powered by woolen sails, learn how to make lace or milk goats genetically modified to produce spider silk. And yet, textiles of all kinds are intrinsic to our lives and cultures. The invention of clothing is central to the development of cultures and civilizations. When Adam and Eve ate the forbidden fruit of the tree of knowledge, they recognized they were naked and immediately tried to fashion clothes out of fig leaves. Our clothes and home furnishing now allow us to survive all kinds of inhospitable climates, even outer space, and act like avatars of our identities and aspirations. The fabrics we choose, and where we get them from, still have butterfly effect consequences on the lives of the people who make them, and on the world around us. Perhaps it is time to stop being like early Egyptologists, eagerly tearing through mummies' linen coverings to grab at the treasures they might contain, and instead aspire to the care and craft of the ancient Egyptians themselves. We have, after all, been spinning fibres into threads for well over 30,000 years, and then weaving, knitting, and knotting those threads into all manner of marvellous objects. A little more attention to detail shouldn't be too much to ask. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of The Golden Thread by Cassius and Clare. Text copyright 2018 Cassius and Clare. Production copyright 2018 Hodder & Stoughton Limited. All rights reserved. For more information about our unabridged audiobooks, please visit www.johnmurray.co.uk.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.